Okay, Lynn, go ahead. Would you like a reminder when you got 5 minutes left of your time?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Okay, this is, I've got something, it's a little strange, but yeah, 5 minute warning would be great.
Okay.
And, yep, so essentially I've got video on one phone and audio on the other, so I'm just going to go ahead and minimize this guy. So thank you very much for the introduction, and I think the technology thing kind of spun me out there for a minute. I've got to figure that out. But, you know, I'm so grateful to be asked to share. You know, my first thought anytime something's coming up during the workday is I want to say, oh, you know, I never know what's going to happen during the workday. I shouldn't, you know, plan any shares for during the workday. And the truth is, if I just plan out that time, it's always fine, you know. So anyway, kind of putting that, something that I need to set aside just to be present for the rest of the meeting. Oh, so my name is Lynn. I am an alcoholic and also a compulsive eater. So I love the BBA format. And one of the things that I really love about it is that it really helps to put the mental obsession into perspective and really help me diagnose myself as a, you know, as somebody who needs this program, right? A real this type of addict, real that type of addict, because I didn't understand, like, this really connected so many dots for me with regard to, like, what am I really up against? What am I really up against that I need to be coming to a fellowship around this area and then also be provided with this spiritual solution called the 12 Steps of, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, there's many others. And that particular chapter, more about alcoholism, does, I think, such a fantastic job in really helping me break that down. And what I've really been focused on this month of my birthday, my anniversary month, has been that this, of myself and by myself, I do not have a mental defense against the first, right? It's that mental obsession. What makes my issue physically around these substances academic? What would make it academic is a solution to the mental problem, and I don't have it. I don't have it of myself and by myself. I am either wrestling with myself, should I, shouldn't I? Maybe it's, I think I'll put it in some milk. Maybe it's this time it'll be different. You know, whatever that obsession looks like, I don't have that, and I need it. That's the power that I need. I don't have that power. And so one of the things that really struck me over the last few days, it just kind of like a hammer on the head, I was listening to a share one time, a retreat, and the person leading was gently trying to tell one of the participants that it isn't about not acting out in the addictive, you know, once we've been taken through this process, my job is not to not act out around this substance or that substance. I have to do that to have my illness exposed, because I can't. I'll be treating my ism. I'll be treating with the substance. And so there are two treatments for any of the things that I suffer from. One of them is acting out in the addiction. And so if I am doing that, I cannot have my illness exposed to me, because I will, and the treatment, I'll never know which treatment really works if I'm not removed from the treatment of compulsively eating or drinking or whatever. If that's not removed, I will always wonder, what was I getting, the placebo or the drug, you know? But this more about alcoholism, this, you know, the mental defense part of it is I can't make abstinence or sobriety my number one priority, or, you know, the most important thing in my life without exception. I cannot do that of myself and by myself. So even taking it a step further from I can't not drink or eat or whatever it is, I can't not do that of myself and by myself. I'm completely defeated in step one around being able to stop once I start. And then I also cannot, it tells me, I cannot not go back without it in my body. I cannot go back of myself and by myself. So what is my job as somebody who identifies as a real alcoholic, addict, food addict, whatever, you know, compulsive, whatever thing it may be, chaos control. What does it mean to be a real addict in this way? Is that not only can I not stop once I start, I cannot stay stopped. And if I take it even deeper into the malady, it's that I cannot even make the things that look like treatment. I can't make those the most important thing in my life without exception either, of myself and by myself, because I have the ism thinking. I have the way I approach life without the solution that is the 12 steps of, you know, Anonymous. I need those steps to treat the underlying malady. My job isn't to stay away from X, to abstain from Y. My job is to treat my ism. It's an ism, not a wasm. And once I've exposed through my not acting out in that area, once I've been able to expose that, I can see the thinking that goes before the mental obsession. And that mental obsession is, it's the obsession to control everything, really, right? So this in the More About Alcoholism, we have these wonderful stories to help demonstrate for any one of us, certainly for me, what it looks like before I've proceeded into the relapse. You know, what is the relapse? The relapse is not the first X. You know, it's not the drink I pick up after X amount of sobriety. It's not the whatever I pick after years of abstinence. The relapse has to start with my thinking, because my thinking is the problem. It's where my problem centers. And the thinking is so perfectly described in Jim's story and in Fred's story. And that is that with Jim, he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And we have a snapshot into his day that says, I used to own this business and now I'm a salesperson. Which I, as a recovered person, I can only imagine on a daily to be reminded of my failure, of my inability to have controlled my drinking to such a degree that now I'm working for the place that I used to own. To have some words with the boss, you know, to then be on my own out in the country, how lucky I am today as a recovered person to have access, immediate access to anybody to share what's going on with me, but to hop in a car and drive out to the country. By the time I'm thinking I'm going to put it in some milk, there's no way. I couldn't, the idea of making a phone call at that point, the idea of maybe I should have hit a meeting, I'm in the obsession at that point, right? And so this mental defense is what I need most, this remembrance of that hitting a bottom, the remembrance of think it through. And I love in the BBA when it says, you know, are you ready to accept that I will never be able to think it through? When I need it most, it says in that short paragraph, when I need it most, doesn't matter if I've just spent time talking on the phone with somebody about how wonderful abstinence, sobriety, recovery is, if I have not treated the underlying malady, I will not remember how great it was to talk to that fellow on the telephone. I can't. That for me is so, like, that is a defeat that is so complete, you know, complete defeat. I can't, of myself and by myself, I can't even make making a phone call a priority. Right. And I can see that in my life untreated. I'll pull out a perfect example from this week, from today, this morning. I'm with my loved one in the car. I'm driving them to the office. And even though I over and over again say it's, you know, they're doing their thing, leave them alone. You know, I'm not only a perfectionist sometimes for myself, I'm a perfectionist for others. And I am literally telling her what she needs to do, you know, what you need to do is, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't even realize it. But what I can, and then getting to the office and realizing it after the fact, to realize that I got up this morning and I was anxious. I'm anxious when I go to the office on Mondays. Often I wake up anxious. It's my default as I'm kind of half awake. I'm anxious. And what did I not do this morning? Center myself with extra prayer and meditation. So it, you know, that obsession to just go right back into old, you know, old behaviors, right? If it's old, if it was old, why is, you know, if it's old, why am I doing it, right? I need to treat that on a day-to-day. And that, by treating that, that's what keeps the obsession at bay. But without that treatment of the steps, the consummation of this process, I've got no hope. I can't, and I continue to do the same. I do what I always do, and I get what I always get. In Fred's story, he talks about his self-reliance. And, you know, that was, it's something that I'm certainly not alone, but, you know, that was my default. You know, although I really came at it usually from the sense of, I was talking to my stepdad about this, that my thinking is that, and the fear is that I'm exempt from human law, that anyone can make a mistake. So that in of its nature, it separates me, right? It separates me from everybody. And if I am in that thinking, I am, you know, self-reliance is failing me. So Fred in that story says, I always was able to figure out my own problems. You know, I've always been good at it, dealing, you know, with my own problems. That way I didn't think I needed this help. And I didn't think I was as bad as you guys. So I didn't need this help. And yet there he was, you know, walking across the threshold and not nary a thought of maybe I shouldn't do that, right? Like the thought came to me, I would have a cocktail with dinner, and the thought didn't even come. So before I was exposed to BBA, I just, there was this idea of like, what happens, right? What happens that I'm going to relapse? The idea is, oh, well, it's if I stop going to meetings, or if I stop making phone calls, or if I, you know, I don't have enough commitments. Like those things are the thing that keeps me out of the obsession. You know, oh, I got to be reminded how horrible it was. So I got to work with others so that I'm reminded how horrible it was. Certainly, we get great reminders, you know, of how horrible it was when we listen to newcomers. But the truth is, if I am untreated, it doesn't matter if I have all of those things. You know, I could walk out the door and have it ready in my car. You know, I can do that. I can go to a meeting. I can be untreated in every activity of my life, including those that center around 12-step meetings. What's the word? Fellowship, if you will. All of that I can do untreated, right? I need to treat it with spirituality, and that will keep the obsession to think, which I think folks here probably talked a little bit about, you know, that those ego factors, what that ego and defiance looks like in my life is the repeat of hitting emotional bottoms or physical ones, feeling desperate enough to get the help, and what happens? What is this manifestation of this built-in forgetter, we call it. I don't have perspective. I can't count on it. And I know today that it's a mind function, that whether I am treated or not treated, I'm having experiences, and my illness can attach itself to those things. I can have false dependencies in my 12-step fellowship. And you know, to be able to be super honest with you guys, you know, one of my things I just kind of hit me square on the nose is my attachment, my false dependency upon my thought of being a good sponsor and how that affects me. And if I let that eat at me, you know, back into the obsession. So I could be doing all these things and go into the obsession. It really is that mental obsession isn't just this idea of, I'll, you know, this is how I can do it again, you know, and actually I'll circle back, probably all over the place, but I am going to circle back. Part of that obsession, I make a point for myself, is that I will never, you know, act out. I will never use over things. What I have done is through my years of abusing these substances, these behaviors, whatever, I have set, you know, I have warped my mind, right? Glass in hand, fork in hand, you know, thought in hand. My mind is warped so that when anything comes up, you know, whether it's the restless, irritable, discontented, it's a default. It's almost like in the bowling alley, if there's a slant in the bowling alley, that ball is just going to roll to the left. or the record where the needle can't seem to get out of the groove. I like the record. I'm dating myself, but I like the record because if anybody's ever had a warped record, they know how easy it is, or you know, that's sarcastic, how difficult it is to actually unwarp a record. I can't unwarp the record. I would pile all my records on top of it and it wouldn't unwarp, you know, it would be warped. But also the skip, you know, the record will not get out of the groove. And that is that mental function of, you know, anything now, happy, glad, mad, or sad, for whatever reason, my mind goes to, you don't make this even better right now, this thing, you know, that I get my ass kicked with every time. So that's that part of the mental obsession. But I do know that it's a mind-powered function of the ego and the defiance combined that actually make that hitting of bottom, make all these exterior frothy emotional appeals, if you will, they make them ineffective where I forgot. Is anybody, can you hear me okay? Uh-oh. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. 5 more minutes.
Okay, great. Thank you. I didn't know what that was. Okay, so I have a bottom of any kind. And I'm like, man, phew, I really need some help. And maybe somebody suggests something. And I'm open-minded, right? I'm open-minded. I've got my butt kicked. That's a hitting a bottom. Somebody's offered some hope. I reach out. If I do not consummate the process, that is where the defiance and the ego resurge. I can't maintain it just from the remembrance of the hitting a bottom. I must enlarge my spiritual life. I must continue to do this. And if not, what happens is I start forgetting. The ego has amazing recuperative powers, and then it swallows up the attitudes of, I'll do anything. Yeah, you know what, this feels great to be sober, abstinent, you know, refraining from this behavior. All of that feels so good. And what gets replaced with is the negative mind function that goes on, the negative self-talk, the I wasn't that bad, the this is really a, you know, my husband's just getting on my back, you know, all of that stuff comes back. And that's where I could see today that hitting a bottom is never meant to be a long-term, it's never meant long-term to keep me from doing those things. It is not meant to. It's meant to get me into a process. And the process is the 12 steps. And that first hitting a bottom or that hitting a bottom, that's intended to get me into that process where I am able to then keep myself, but through this process, I treat my malady and the mental and the physical get sorted, meaning the mental obsession is not there. I am able to discern what I should and shouldn't put in my body. Therefore, the issue with those products, those behaviors, they become academic. It's to keep it academic. Not I could ever do, you know, eat those things again, drink those things again, but it's meant to make it academic again because I know. So the saddest thing that I see at a meeting maybe is somebody who says, oh, you guys, I screwed up again. You know, I was doing really good and then there I went and decided not to go to meetings. If I don't treat my malady, of course I'm not going to go to meetings. So I think that the self-recriminations, you know, the what's wrong with me, I'm in a fellowship and I can't seem to do these things. I think it's one of the most important things that I, you know, go circle back on, read on when I'm working with people, that this particular part of it is very important. And that's why I love BBA so much, is it really makes it clear, the physical, the mental, and then the spiritual malady, which goes right back to the bedevilments. I feel like I've talked plenty of time. I do. I feel like I have. Maybe someone can just give me a sense, and then I think that's pretty much what I wanted to say.
Okay, well, you've got 2 minutes, but whatever.
Oh. Well, you know what? Thank you, everybody. I'm just delighted to be here. Thank you so much. That's my wrap up.
Great. Thank you so much, Lynn, for the great talk. Thank you for speaking with us today. As a reminder, we only record our speaker and not the shares. Another general reminder, if you come in late in the future, please be sure